Hi, you're listening to Hypocritical, a podcast by Hypocritic GG. I'm Lou, some call me CheatSpeak, and we're talking about cheating. Not on your spouse or your significant other. Do not do that. We're talking about the good kind of cheating. Cheating in your video games. Cheat codes, secrets, infinite lives, infinite health, moon jump, no one can hurt you, level select. Those sort of fun things that you would find, especially in games of generations past, that would change your experience and make it so much more ridiculous and fun and interesting. What happened to cheat codes in games? That's this episode of Hypocritical. You may have noticed, especially in recent generations, that explicit cheat codes like that are maybe not so much in vogue, certainly not like they used to be. So that's something we thought would be interesting to dive into this time around. So you may not know this, but the origin of a lot of those cheats as we think about them in specifically generations like the NES and the Master System, the SNES and the Genesis, even the N64, the PlayStation 1, things like that. Those, you know, kind of traditional quote-unquote cheat codes were often the result of people leaving their development tools in the games that they were working on. When programming games of those generations, many cheats were ultimately the practical result of needing to move through a game quickly, on demand, for various reasons, for testing purposes. Infinite health, getting through more difficult sections, obviously a level select to go play through certain pieces of the game at will instead of needing to start from scratch every time like you would if you were booting it up fresh, things like that. Not all of them, you know, were built in this context. Did GoldenEye's devs really need a big head mode, for example? I mean, obviously, the answer is yes, but for those practical purposes, probably not. So what we consider those sort of fun or weird or quirky extras that developers would leave in their games were often the result of very practical needs during development and often left on purpose. In part, a large reason why things like your Game Genies and your Game Sharks from generations past could enable only certain cheating features in certain games would depend on what shortcuts and what, you know, pieces of these tools developers would leave in their code when it, you know, got pressed onto the cartridge and you know, put out the door, right? Why, I'm just saying as an example, Castlevania 1 might have an infinite health code, but Castlevania 3 doesn't. That's just an example. I don't know if they actually do, but that's the sort of thing that we're getting at. Back in the day, and especially in those generations with development environments and programming languages so much more, let's say, primitive and close to the metal, so to speak, where you're working in almost machine code and assembly language a lot of the time, not a lot of those high-level languages, it was often risky, time-consuming, and somewhat dangerous to remove a lot of these tools out of your code because it may move different pieces of the code around, compromise other things that are hard-coded in there. So it was easier to just disable those routines and disable those features before shipping instead of trying to rip them out of the code entirely. So whatever was left was then usually accessible for devices like a Game Genie if, you know, explicit codes weren't left there on purpose for players to take advantage of. And take advantage of them they did if you could find them. And that was another really important element to the cheat code experience, right? The dynamic of information sharing, especially in that era, and how the internet really went about changing that. Cheats were much, much harder to find, obviously, in the 80s and the early mid-1990s without an internet connection because such a thing did not exist. You didn't have that very easy, reachable compendium of a lot of this information if it wasn't provided from another source. So if a cheat device didn't document these codes explicitly in some user manual, or if a magazine like Nintendo Power didn't distribute the codes or hint at the unlock methods and send you on a wild goose chase, right? You would often have to find these things organically, just by playing the game, discovering different secrets, figuring it all out yourself, or find them through word of mouth. Maybe you're on the playground during recess, or you're sitting around at lunch, and one of your friends comes bounding up to the table. Oh, my, I found this thing. You just hit these buttons in Sonic 3, and you can play any level you want. And you're like, oh, my God, I got to go try this out when I get home. It made the existence and the mystique around these things so much more exciting, and the hunt for them and the quest to sort of tease out your favorite game secrets and wringing every bit of it you can out of the experience. It was all really fun. It was really unique, and it was kind of a product of that era of how these sort of features were built into a lot of these games. So where did they go? Obviously, the dynamic is not what it used to be from that point of view. And a lot of games, especially larger releases and, you know, higher budget releases that you see today, kind of don't have the same flavor of proliferation of these kinds of things. So what happened? There's a few reasons we would want to talk about from that perspective, and I'm sure there are many more. One of the facts of the situation is that it's just simply a lot harder to leave secrets and things in games today, both from a practicality standpoint and from a discovery standpoint. You know, especially in larger studios that have very, you know, robust code reviews and very rigid corporate standards, it is much, much more challenging, if not impossible, to leave hidden goodies within a game without jumping through so many hoops and getting so much approval for even, you know, small modifications that may not impact the core game in any way, but are still, you know, you're still making changes to that product. Even, you know, Bungie would be a good example of that when they were producing their Halo titles. If I remember correctly, they would often have to leave months at the end of some of their Halo development strictly for Easter eggs and surprises and fun things, because it was just so much more challenging and in some cases impractical to add those things in as you went. Obviously, you know, one or two people hacking away at an NES game could leave almost whatever they wanted in there. You have a large studio with hundreds of people working on something. Obviously, not so much the case. In addition to that, it's just a lot harder to hide things within games, even if you have that opportunity. Between code decompilation and hacking and the instant proliferation of information that the internet allows you to have, you know, a game's secrets can be unearthed, any and all of these secrets, within, you know, minutes of release in some cases, hours, a day or two, everything that a game kind of has contained, if it's not all leaked before release anyway, it all comes to light so, so much faster than it would otherwise. And I think a really good example of this is Animal Well, you know, the indie Metroidvania game that sort of caught fire close to its release. It's an entire game built on secrecy and mystery and the cryptic nature of everything that happens in it, where it's one of those games where you're encouraged to examine every single pixel for secrets, for any sort of progression tip you might have missed. You know, if that were released decades ago, some of those secrets would not be found for probably decades. Years and years where it would go, where you would have to try to solve all these puzzles yourself. It would be incredibly challenging. But upon release of that game, all of these hidden secrets, all of these hidden goodies and different layers of depth that are within it were discovered by a very, very dedicated community within probably a couple of days of its release, where, you know, even the creator expected those secrets to be unearthed months, if not years later, certainly not at the speed that it was. On one hand, that's really cool and that's interesting and that's great, because you have all of these dedicated people coming together in ways that would not have been possible all those years and decades to go to tease out all of these different secrets so quickly and so passionately. You love to see it. At the same time, it's just a very different dynamic and sort of speaks to the challenges of trying to keep things hidden and surprising in a very different era of the industry. You also have to consider how robust online experiences have sort of changed the ability for cheat codes to even exist in that sort of context. You have things like online multiplayer, in-game economies, progression speed at, you know, the speeds at which a player goes through content and burns through a game's runtime. You cannot risk compromising those features with something like a cheat code that you accidentally left into the game. Because if online multiplayer becomes unfair, if in-game economies crash, then people probably aren't spending more money in that context. And for a lot of games, especially free-to-play ones, that is a death knell and a big, big no-no. So that kind of comes to our next point as well, which is the almighty dollar simply dictating a lot of how these dynamics need to play out in a more modern context. Cheats are essentially one of many casualties of what is and often remains more aggressive monetization policies across the industry for both free-to-play games and major AAA releases. Why allow unlocking a cheat through natural means of gameplay or discovery when you can buy access to some of those ridiculous things for $3.99, $9.99, $19.99, a Madden Ultimate Team pack, some booster that you have to unlock? It's yet another sort of revenue stream for some companies in some ways to monetize an experience that previously was just considered part of how games worked. And for better or for worse, that is, again, how the industry sort of flows in that sense. While not explicitly related to cheats itself, you know, a lot of those kind of game elements have suffered a similar fate in recent years and decades. Everything from kind of standard game progression in a lot of cases, level up to max for X amount of dollars, skip 25 levels in the current season's battle pass for X dollars, you know, taking that, even something as far as cosmetics. I'll put my Angry Joe hat on. $10 for blue? I'm going to pay for blue? It speaks to the practicalities of modern game development and studio sustainability and the reality of what it takes to ensure that a game and the people that make it survive. And for better or worse, again, that is just another way that the lens has sort of had to shift on certain topics and certain pieces of the industry. One other interesting way to look at it, and a positive one, I think, in a lot of ways, is the accessibility argument, where if you can make your game easier, you know, more accommodating, more inclusive, why lock those features or those capabilities behind obscure codes or generally cryptic, unlockable methods, right? That could often mean the difference between someone wanting to pick up your game and buy it or not. If they can tone down how hard enemies hit, if they can make themselves stronger, if they can navigate through the game in different, more accommodating ways, that can make the difference in people engaging with it or not, whether they like it, whether they don't, whether they're willing to pay for it, or whether they're willing to pass it up. And while it may take out, again, a little bit of that mystique and a little bit of that fun factor, helping the game reach a broader audience and be enjoyed by more people is a good thing. So it's, again, one of the ways that the industry has evolved, and it's one that you may not actively sort of think about. Have you thought about putting cheat codes into your games in a long time? Maybe not. As the industry naturally evolves and what video games are continue to naturally grow and change with the times, these sort of things happen. And the traditional sort of way of looking at cheat codes and secrets and unlocking them and finding them that players may have been used to all those years ago for all those generations of games has changed, just like games themselves have so radically changed in all these different ways from generation to generation. It's going to happen. And it's fun sometimes to take a look back at some of those things, consider how the industry has evolved, remember what's gone by, and frame it in a modern context. It's interesting to us. I hope it's interesting to you too. And that brings us to our post-show topics here. Tell us how it's interesting to you. Have you played around with cheat codes in some of those games from generations past? What were some of your favorites? Did you find any interesting ways to unlock them yourself? Did you stumble upon really interesting cheats or secrets in older games when you were just poking around with them? Let us know in our Discord. How do you get on that Discord? Hypocritic.gg, of course. It's your hub for all things Hypocritic. Check out our live streams, convention coverage, video reviews, industry interviews, and more. And join our Discord community where you can react to topics we discuss here on the podcast and get the inside scoop on what's coming next from us. Thanks so much for listening. Stay fresh, cheese bags. We'll catch you back here real soon.